You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, political expert and radio broadcaster Jay Amernick, and me, journalist in all media Heather Vale Goss, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern at politicalfixradio.com. And welcome to the show for June 4th. I'm Heather Vale, and joining me are my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Jay is a strategic planner who helps his clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks, and he also serves as the bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their business in the U.S., and he has a development lab which creates smartphone apps and inventions. Rick Raddatz is a serial entrepreneur and online marketer with a degree in philosophy, and that led to his development, which he calls the solution. Pentanomics are the philosophy behind the solution, which very much fuel what we talk about here on The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vale, known as The Unwrapper. I'm a freelance interviewer in all media, TV, radio, print, and online. And I'm called The Unwrapper because I peel back the layers of the onion to discover the truth. Hey guys, welcome to the show for a June lovely, balmy morning.
It is balmy.
It is, yeah.
I can feel it radiating in behind me here.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. And I had to turn off the AC so it didn't make all this noise while we were doing this. But yeah, it's a hot day in Vegas. That's for sure.
Yeah.
How about you, Rick? Yeah. How's it doing in Colorado? I can't hear Rick.
Okay.
Yeah, I see him talking.
So we'll ask how I am. I am very good.
Yeah. I wanted to talk to you about, because a week ago on the show, you were talking about getting out and meeting the political candidates in your town, in your city. And you and I actually did that last Wednesday night after
That's
the show.
Right.
We went to an
That's
event where we hobnobbed with some political candidates. So how did that go for you?
It went very well. It was good. You know, I ran into a couple that I already knew. It was good to see them again. Met some new people, and you have to obviously go beyond that sort of, you know, handshaking and everything like that, because as I suggested before, a lot of times these local elections are actually more important than the national election. It really affects your life a lot more. The issues may not be as sexy, but it's as I say, all politics is local, and that's the truth. It really is. The chances of you being up and, you know, involved, if you're ever involved in a court case in front of one of these judges is, well, actually, it's highly unlikely because they'll recuse themselves if you know them, obviously. But
oh, really?
I did not know that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But even if you've just met them at a networking event, they'll still not take your case?
If they didn't remember me, but if I remember them and I brought it up, they would probably recuse themselves. That would be my guess. Just to avoid any impropriety, if they don't remember meeting me, but then a picture surfaces, you know, one of, you know, the wonderful pictures
hanging
that
out
Roger,
together.
That Roger takes at these events, you know, shaking hands, and it's like, okay, here, and then it's a mistrial, and then the whole thing starts again, and that's nobody's wish. You know, everybody wants to, move the docket along, as they say. Is Rick back on?
Rick?
I'm back on.
Oh, yay, okay.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now.
So Jay and I were just talking about the political event that we went to last week, which was a networking event, exactly the type that Jay suggested people go to on the show last week. And so I was just asking him how it went with the candidates. Jay, what kind of questions did you ask them? Or is it just kind of a, hey, this is who I am, nice to know you kind of thing?
Yeah, and a lot of them tell you, you know, sort of flat out, you know, one guy handed me his card and on the card it listed his, you know, his platform, I guess.
Yeah.
Which I'm not a fan of. I think it involves discussion and literally if you show that to me and then he asked me for money, you know, political donation too, which I thought was a little.
Oh, was that the guy who was saying, if you're going to donate, don't make it over the certain dollar amount?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 He got all my friends.
Yeah, but it was like he didn't. There was like no discussion. He's like, "Here's what I stand for," and then you know.
Yeah, and if you want to donate, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he was one of these guys, sort of an ideologue who thinks that everybody thinks like them, and if you don't, you're clearly like a lunatic.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
And who comes across as the lunatic then? Yeah, exactly.
Yes. It's always the ideologue that comes across.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Not the reasonable person who's involved in critical thinking.
Yeah. So, Rick, what are your thoughts on all this?
Well, I'm one of those crazy ideologues. Except I believe something no one else believes.
Because you're neither left nor right, and you're not the kind of person. Like, okay, so a great example is you have people.
Well, I am a transpartisan ideologue. I believe we have the solution.
That involves critical thinking and it involves discussion. What I'm talking about is are the people who have this notion set in their mind, and if you don't agree with them, you're out of your mind. A and B sort of play this weird political game, right? So the people that are all up in arms right now about President Obama doing something were totally fine with George W. Bush doing it, and inversely, the people who derailed George Bush for doing certain things are praising Obama for doing them. So it's just like if it's your guy, it's like from Animal House, they can't do that to our pledges. Only we can do that to our pledges.
Okay, well, I'll tell you the difference between a left ideologue, a right ideologue, and then a transpartisan ideologue. Okay, here goes.
Very good.
The right and left ideologues, we know are wrong, okay, because the right and left both exist in this country. They both vote. They're not going to go away. And so how could either side possibly have the answer? It's impossible because they don't respect the fact that both sides vote. So we know that the left and right ideologues are totally wrong. With the transpartisan ideologue, the theory that we can cap spending and then within the cap prioritize spending so that the prioritizing forces spending to become more wise and benevolent and basically more left-leaning over time. So we have right-leaning limits and left-leaning spending. The transpartisan ideologue has not yet been proven wrong. That's the only difference. Nobody even knows about us. So we barely register. But a true transpartisan ideologue is as emotional, as confident, as sure that everyone else is wrong as any other ideologue. It's just that it's a newer thing. It is based on critical thinking. It has not been proven right or wrong yet, and we got to have the debate.
Yeah, no, I agree.
There's a lot of similarities, actually.
Well, there's a little nuance to it, I think. I think it's not so much that they're wrong, it's that the transpartisan idea is right. As in right, I mean correct.
Yeah, I had someone explain it to me from a different perspective yesterday, or 2 days ago. And what they said is that transpartisanship is about taking all of your value and keeping it on, and then understanding that you can add in the other values without losing your values. So it's a more of an additive process. And, it seems like our values are in conflict, basically, but really if you think about, within limits, we want to help people. Okay, that now we're adding in the helping people and the limits together, and so we're asked to see that it's possible to constantly improve and spend better and better and better if only ideas compete. And that's how we get better and better social justice within tighter and tighter limits on government. We have to learn how to sell that everybody wins concept.
Yeah. Well, but the challenge is that it's such a crime to be considered wrong nowadays. Like you cannot say I was wrong, because, and again, I think this sort of started actually during the George W. Bush era.
I think I tell you that you're wrong every week, don't I?
Yeah, that's different. I'm not in political office, nor am I ever running for political office. But
a lot of people think you should.
Okay,
that's insane.
I've heard people say that so many times, Jay. Jay should run for office.
Oh, for God's sakes, I got enough problems. I guess it started just because the way the internet was kind of exploding and the way we got information. But I think it really happened during the George W. Bush era, where it was almost like, okay, he was wrong on this, so he should be impeached. And it's the same thing with President Obama. It's like for them to admit they were wrong, they feel like they're putting their head on the chopping block. So the problem, instead of actually saying, okay, I was wrong and here's why, you get like this nuanced, bogus, circumlocution crapola. Instead of really getting to the answer, you have, these sort of somewhat masters of BS, right now, I believe he just stepped down, but Jay Carney is the press secretary, and they're like masters of not saying, you know what, we screwed up. And I think the American people would be like, that would be refreshing to hear a politician say, yeah, you know what, we messed up, we're going to fix it, and we're going to do better.
Yeah, it would be refreshing. I agree.
Yeah. No. Because think about the people in politics who have done that. They get destroyed because the incentives in the current structure. I agree with you that that's what should happen. I mean, that's what I would want to have happen. And maybe with different incentives, maybe that can happen. But with the current incentives, it is totally reasonable for politicians to play the BS game, because if they don't, they are screwed. So I don't fault them for it. I don't fault them for it, because they're just doing what the incentives are.
No, it's when they've admitted they were wrong, it's when they had no choice. Okay, so I guess the latest example might be Anthony Weiner, right? And the crime
the
there,
evidence was clear.
The crime there was not.
Well, no, you can also use like Christie from New Jersey, Chris Christie.
Okay, right. Yeah, he apparently got caught red, and that was one of those things where it's like, okay, if he was lying, he was really. I mean, he was.
No. He never admitted that he was wrong. He says that his team was wrong to do that. My God, right. That was awful. This person is fired. We're going to get on this right away. And him admitting that his team was wrong, all the enemies of him, which of course is going to be a lot at that level, are finding ways to kind of tie it to all him, and he's toast.
As usual, it's not the crime; it's the cover up. Again, going back to the Anthony Weiner thing, so he sent a couple of inappropriate pictures to a woman he wasn't married to, but the real crime was the fact that he was feigning this outrage and was going to spend millions of taxpayer dollars to like impanel a congressional hearing on it, just to cover his own ass.
Can you imagine being a politician and just realize the moment that he realized that he sent his picture of himself to his public Twitter account. Can you imagine?
Yeah, okay, that does not even make sense. That does not make sense.
Okay,
Nobody does that.
No, because but sometimes you're dealing with such a warped ego and such a narcissist. And again, to the point where he ran for mayor of New York, did he not? Like, after all that. It boggles the mind.
And he was competitive, because it doesn't matter that you're an idiot or a jerk or whatever, you're our idiot or jerk or whatever. And he falls into the whatever category. But so that's why the solution has to be something besides the left-right conflict. We've done that for a while. That's not the solution. The solution has to be taking a step back, seeing that we have to do cap and prioritize. We have to cap spending so that it's sustainable at least, and then within that cap, prioritize. So, again, the transparency of the prioritized budget is what's going to force good ideas to win and results to matter. And right now, results don't matter. Effectiveness doesn't matter. It's all power. So cap and prioritize, that's the solution.
Okay.
Yeah. And oddly enough, it's funny. I think the key to it is going to be convincing, building up like that sort of a grassroots from the Democrat side on the cap part of it, and then the prioritize from the Republicans, because it's if it's a Democrat saying yes, we have to prioritize, the Republicans aren't going to listen. It's like they're going to. It was Nixon going to China, right? He had the credibility to go there because he was clearly not a communist sympathizer. he's the one who had the credibility to do that.
Okay, Jay, I have a question for you then.
Yes.
So are you saying that the way to get the solution out there is to really do two parallel campaigns? One is conservatives for social justice, and the other one is progressives for fiscal stability.
The answer is sort of, yes, because but you have to let the Republicans know exactly what
you
you're
should
doing.
Run for office.
See? You see?
Not running for office. I am not running for office. Oh, my God.
Okay. Well, let's continue this
discussion
after
the break. The answer is sort of, yes.
And we're also going to have the top story after the break. And
wonderful.
So we'll be right back on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. And we were just laughing during the break because Jay can't believe that people actually want him to run for office. But this is something I hear repeatedly. People think he's a politician, or if not, that he should be a politician.
I don't know whether to be insulted or thank them.
Or flattered? Yeah. Well, yeah. I think they mean it in a good way.
No. Jay, you've got to be flattered. It means that you are a recognized charismatic leader and stable and trustworthy and all the things that they want in a politician.
I can
yeah.
So I think it's a compliment.
I do. I appreciate it. I'm kidding.
Yeah, I think it's a compliment too. Do you guys want to hear the top story today?
Yes.
All right.
Sure. If we say no, will we not?
Well, if you say no, I'm going
to
drop you.
Do we really have a choice? See, our votes don't matter. Don't vote.
Right.
Okay, go on.
Just voted prior to the show structure, which is not a living document. It's now in PDF form, which means it's solid. Okay. You can't change that.
Yeah, it's written in stone. There is a top story every week. Yeah. And this one's really important. This one is very important.
Okay.
25 years ago today, on June 4th, 1989, Chinese tanks and troops cracked down on protests at Tiananmen Square in Beijing. Known as the Tiananmen Massacre or the June 4th Massacre, the infamous event saw troops with assault rifles and tanks killing hundreds or possibly even thousands of unarmed civilians, including protesters and onlookers. The civilians were trying to block the military's advance towards Tiananmen Square in the heart of Beijing, which student demonstrators had occupied for 7 weeks. China allows no public discussion of the events, and today, on the 25th anniversary, police blanketed central Beijing to block any public commemoration of one of the darkest chapters in recent Chinese history. Scores of police and paramilitary troops patrolled the vast plaza and surrounding streets in Beijing's heart, stopping vehicles and demanding identification from passersby. Chinese censors scrubbed domestic blogs and social media websites of comments marking the crackdown. Some relatives of the crackdown's victims were allowed to pay their respects at cemeteries, but only with police escorts. Others did so at home under surveillance, expressing frustration at the restrictions placed on their remembrances. The Chinese government has largely ignored the relatives' demands for an admission of wrongdoing, interesting, and for a complete formal accounting of the crackdown and the number of casualties. Beijing's verdict is that the student-led protests aimed to topple the ruling Communist Party and plunge China into chaos. Protest leaders said they were seeking broader democracy and freedom, along with an end to corruption and favoritism within the party. Near the square in Beijing, reporters were told to leave following the daily crackdown flag-raising ceremony, and there were no signs of demonstrations or public commemorations. Dozens of dissidents and other critics have already been detained by police, held under house arrest, or sent out of the city in what they say is a more restrictive clampdown than usual, reflecting the increasingly conservative political atmosphere under the new president. On normal days, the vast plaza is closely watched by surveillance cameras and plainclothes police and officers riding segways, but most people are allowed to enter without having their IDs checked. Today's measures, including the deployment of hundreds of security and emergency services personnel, was a dramatic tightening down. For the first time, a pro-Beijing group, the Voice of Loving Hong Kong, was planning a counter-rally at the park's entrance in support of the military crackdown, in a sign of increasing polarization in the former British colony. So, Jay, I know you've talked about this incident on several occasions, so what are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is to you know, always recognize the tremendous courage of the young man who stood in front of the tank. I wish I knew his name, but it was it's really one of those indelible images. I mean, it boggles the mind. And I remember I was in college at the time.
I was also in university at the time. So yeah, this really struck home for us.
Yeah. It's that, but it also always reminds me, you know, when everybody was, you know, very excited about the Beijing Olympics, and I, you know, yes, you know, the IOC is a pretty much in like any other world body is an anti-American, anti-Semitic bunch of, you know, lunatics, but to have the Olympics there, I think it is insulting to the rest of the world. You know, it stuff like that bothers me. And the way we do business with China bothers me because they are in it for themselves. There's no, what can we do to, you know, like I said, when Chinese businesses come here, they're all about bringing business back to China, as opposed to other countries. When they come here, they're all about building up their business here and not helping America, but building their business here.
Don't you think they had the Olympics there as like an indication of there can be peace?
No, because nothing's changed. Clearly, I mean, this is what happens. You know, and it's, you know, it's one of those things where you have all these sort of people on the fringes here, both on the right and the left here. You know, say, oh, you know, the government's taking over and we're not free and everything like that. Yes, there are issues. There are things that are not, it's not perfect, but it ain't this. That is a bona fide police state, and I think we need to be careful when we start saying, you know, that about America, that it's a police state and all these other things. This is a real problem here, and the fact that we continue to do business with them and continue to sell them our debt is a huge problem.
So you think we should cut off all ties with China?
No. No, but I think there, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I think the State Department is unfortunately powerless to do anything just because we don't have any leverage.
Yeah.
It's not their fault. There's no leverage.
Rick, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think that China it's just amazing. I mean, it's a really unique situation because they are very different than most totalitarian states. I mean, clearly, you know, the central party or whatever they're called over there, they have control, and no one doubts that. The way to get power is to work up through the ranks of that one party, and it's about their beliefs. And so they don't have the free speech clearly that we do in our democracy and in many democracies around the world. And yet, how are the Chinese bureaucrats and people in power, how are they using that power? In general, they're trying to add freedoms in smart ways, mainly economic freedoms. Like, you know, they understand Hayek better than our economists here in the U.S., and Hayek is a very kind of pro-libertarian, pro-freedom kind of economist. And so the yin and yang of to use a Chinese metaphor of I mean a Japanese metaphor on China here the yin and yang between the authoritarian state and the economic freedom is really interesting, and let me tell you from a my philosophy standpoint why they're doing it. They're doing it because they recognize that democracy has a weakness. Okay, the weakness of democracy, any democracy, is that it lacks the will to make tough decisions, especially internally. Okay, you know, when a nation attacks a democracy, the democracy will rise up and defend itself. But, you know, a democracy will overspend, they will, they'll destroy themselves financially by not making tough choices. And an emerging country has to make a lot of tough choices. And so I think China's actually doing the right thing, because no one's perfect. I don't fault a person for their worst moments or their mistakes. I think in general they are trying to add more and more freedoms over time. It's just taking longer than we would like, And because we haven't solved the democracy problem in the West, the East, in terms of China, is wise to not adopt full democracy yet. Although I believe
just,
the cap and prioritize structure is what America needs, and it's then that's what it would allow China to then trust democracy.
But this isn't just about implementing democracy or not. This is about the government censoring what's going on in the country, erasing things that people are stating, which is true stuff.
Yep.
And you know what we were talking about earlier about politicians
yep.
not admitting they're wrong. They won't admit
yeah.
they're wrong. They won't admit that there was any wrongdoing, and they want to stop the world from hearing anything about it. This is like being in total denial and trying to erase evidence of it. It makes no sense.
No, it makes perfect sense.
Okay.
It makes perfect sense.
Because?
Let me make the case a little bit different way, okay? Let's say you wanted to take over some, or no, let's say you wanted to help Somalia, okay?
Okay.
And you really wanted to help that country transition from the mess it is right now. It's essentially jungle law. Okay, every town has their own laws and they enforce it their own ways because the nation state has failed. And so you have some areas where like gangster type things are running amok and other places are actually pretty good, but it's a mess. And let's say you wanted to really help the nation become mature, the best we know how to do today. You'd have to go in there with an army. You'd have to invade. You'd have to kill people. You'd have to have people on your side even being killed in order to take over the country, implement martial law, okay, complete authoritarian control. As you developed the education and the infrastructures over probably a decade or more, that would then begin to have a hint of the freedom you might want to emerge into, okay? It would be that kind of a process. I think China's going through that process only on a really, really big scale. And so if you measure their freedoms and their decisions compared to us, it seems backwards. It seems like, look, this was 300 years ago thinking. You know, come on, join the modern world. But if you compare China to where they've come from, they're moving in the right direction.
I still think, though, an admission of that, as I said before, that kid in front of the tank is an indelible image. And we don't think about it happening in a first world country, which it did happen in. I think that them admitting that and moving on, I mean, there's no way they're ever going to, they're not going to be able to move forward until they acknowledge that and move on. It's, you know, it's the same thing. Look at, you know, Nazi Germany, until they acknowledged we really screwed up here. Not only that, the concentration camps are still there. They will never be torn down because they're a constant reminder of what they did. And
I agree with you. If they were able to admit it, there would be a huge sign that they've made another leap. I'm just not faulting them for not making it, because I think it's just a way of measuring where they are. As long as they're moving in the right direction generally, because there's always people always take back steps. Individuals, organizations, countries, you know, it's never a straight line. Progress is never a straight line. But the trend is positive, I think, in China and in the world generally, because I believe setbacks are going to happen.
If the trend was positive, don't you think the 25th anniversary of a massacre would be the time to come forward and say, hey, yeah, this should never have happened?
Yeah.
Like, this was the day.
I agree. This would have been a great opportunity. It would have been I bet you it was discussed. It was discussed in their back rooms.
And what went out was an incredibly proactive silencing of the fact that it ever happened.
Yeah.
Well,
woo,
but again, compared to where they came from. Mao, 155 million people killed.
Of course.
You know?
No, there's no doubt. It's not, this isn't, you know, your granddaddy's communism,
okay.
but still, it's,
yeah.
you know, we're a far cry yeah. from Thomas Paine.
See, a country that has great poverty, a country that has great poverty, you know, pretty much any South American country is a good example. They really run a risk implementing democracy fully, because the groundswell of honest need can make them vote for socialist dictators almost, and then you lose the country, like Chavez in Venezuela. And so China, with their big population of and you know, there's a lot of rich people in the cities, a lot of middle class now in the cities, and a whole lot of very, very, very poor people. If they went to democracy, and they're afraid of a, you know, if they're afraid of the slippery slope, okay? So it's this one decision that they're worried about. If they're afraid of the slope. If they move towards open democracy, they're afraid of a rebellion and losing control. And they've accomplished so much through managed progress. They're reasonably afraid. They're rationally afraid of the kind of irrational progress that you make under a democracy.
Okay, well, there's always a period of reformation, especially when you drastically change things. Okay, great example is the Civil War in our country. You know, it took almost 100 years after the Civil War for the Civil Rights Movement, for desegregation, for all of these things to take place and just to really set everything right. You know, just...
Yeah.
So there is going to be that disruption after you make a big, big change. And that's always the way it is. Anytime, think about when you move to a different house or something, or a new job, as things are a little screwy until you settle in and everything becomes a pattern.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
are you comparing moving to Nazi reconstruction?
Yes, he is. I'm putting it on a level that we could all understand.
It's a metaphor.
Yes, it's a metaphor. Yeah. Thank you.
Exactly. I like it. All right. We're going to come back in a few minutes after the break. We're going to have Inside Perspective with Jay Amernick. But right now, we're taking a break. We'll be right back on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. And if you want to call in and join the discussion, ask questions, say something that you want to say, you can do that at 1-888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. First, we're going to go on to the new segment that we have called Inside Perspective. You've heard Jay today talking about how he is not a politician and has no plans to be a politician, but he does have an inside perspective on how politics work. Jay, take it away.
Yes. This week, beware political ads.
Okay.
And, okay. So no matter what they are, whether they're positive, whether they're negative, you really have to sort of sift through and find out what's what. You know, one of the things we once did when I worked for APAC, which was just sort of an exercise in the office I ran, is we took the record of a not so favorable member of Congress and twisted it and turned it with errors and omissions and made him the most, you know, pro-Israel politician that ever lived. And inversely, I took Joe Lieberman's record and made him like the, you know, biggest anti-Semite since Joseph Goebbels. Sorry.
That's not cool.
No. We didn't do this. Wasn't for public. This was just to show people how political ads can be silly and how we can take things out of context and not to believe them was my goal. The problem is that they work, and they work because people have allowed it to work, because they take a very passive attitude when it comes to these things. You know, if you hear something on a political ad and it's a negative ad about an opponent's candidate, if it sounds outrageous, if it sounds like they're guilty of something so outrageous, chances are it's bogus. But the problem is we were so quick to believe it. And it goes back to the ideologue thing. You're so, you know, everyone's so quick to believe, you know, something. If you're a right wing ideologue, you're so quick to believe anything about President Obama. And if you're a left wing ideologue, you're so quick to believe anything about, you know, Mitt Romney or Senator McCain or somebody like that. So it's one of the things where you just have to be very skeptical when you see these ads.
Okay. I find that some politicians play the dirty campaign and they will create ads that take down their opponent, and other politicians refuse to play that way.
Yeah.
What do you think is the better way to?
I think the better way is to be about the issues and everything like that. The problem is that's not sensational. It's not sexy. I can't believe I'm going to reference this, but there was a great episode of the Batman TV show from the 60s where Penguin is running. Penguin's running for mayor. Batman has to run against him, right? And he's got Paul Revere and the Raiders playing at his campaign function. He's got Little Egypt doing a belly dance, and Batman is sitting there. He's like, I'm going to keep this campaign about the issues, and I think these posters are big enough. And of course he loses because he doesn't run a big, sexy campaign. We see that
in media all the time in all these TV shows. I've probably seen 5 TV shows with that exact same scenario, not with the Penguin and Paul Revere and the Raiders, but with with the same concept as the main character takes the high road. They say, I'm not going to play dirty, and they end up losing. That happens all the time. Yeah. This is the message we get given by society.
Right. It's given by the media, not society. It's given to society. But the truth of the matter is about negative ads is that everyone says they hate them, but the sad part is they work. That's the sad part. And what I'm suggesting is people stop paying attention to those and try to find out for themselves what the real deal is.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would.
You know what, Dave? You had me. Well, it's tradition on this show for me to totally disagree with you.
Of course.
Yes.
And this time I totally agree with you. You had me up until that very last recommendation, because you're saying you're going to recommend people not listen to them, and I'm like, good luck. That's not going to change anything. I think we need a more powerful recommendation, one that people can actually take action on.
Well, he's saying to do your own research and figure out whether it's true or not, whether there's anything worth paying attention to.
Yeah.
Well, Rick doesn't think they're going to do that either.
What I'm kind of saying is, I totally agree with Jay here that the ads are totally BS. It's not worth listening to, etc. But I just want to give a more positive recommendation, a more actionable recommendation. I think the actionable recommendation is to listen to the show and learn more about the transpartisan movement, this postpartisan movement, this political fix, the solution, whatever you want to call it, because it's going to be this understanding of the world, the cap and prioritize understanding, that's going to finally change the incentives that will change the ads.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. That's part two. I'm saying in the meantime,
mm-hmm.
Because awareness is always the first step in anything.
Right, and it really screws things up actually in a primary election, because you end up with quite often the biggest lunatic. I will say it here on running against Harry Reid last time was Sue Loudon, who was a perfectly respectable candidate, but was not far enough right, and they ended up the ideologues on the right put up Sharon Angle, who I will say it was, and this is my opinion only, was quite frankly unelectable, and because of that you have people now complaining about Harry Reid on the right, and I'm like, well, why are you complaining about him? Had you put up Sue Loudon, the chances are you would have had her as your senator as opposed to Harry Reid again. And it's just funny to me to see that complaint coming from the people that put up this horrible, horrible candidate. And that's what happens when, we're going to see it again the next presidential election, because it's going to be pretty much open. You're going to have this pantheon of good candidates and like the far left and far right ideologues in there.
Okay, but how do they actually know if a candidate is good if they're getting bombarded with propaganda on both sides? From that person's campaign, you're getting all this whitewash stuff, and from the opposite side, don't pay attention. He's a criminal. He did this. He did that. How do you wade through all that and figure out what the truth is?
that I think is an issue for the individual parties to come together and say, look, let's not eat our own here. Let's not come up with things that are going to be used against us in a general election. You know, that's one of the things that actually killed Al Gore. Is that Bradley didn't get out at all, and he was stayed in, and he hung in, and he was vicious like a dog on a bone, and then didn't even really endorse Al Gore until the very end, I think. And by then it was too late, as opposed to the Republicans that literally the day after John McCain conceded had his photo taken with his arm around George W. Bush and said, I support George W. Bush. I support George W. Bush. I support George W. Bush. And if any of you didn't hear it, I support George W. Bush. It laid it to rest. And they came together and had a much more solidified campaign because of that. So I think it's up to the parties to sort of say, let's not screw with each other too much during a primary season. That's my opinion. That's really where a lot of the real ugliness comes from.
Okay.
Yeah, the intra-party fights can be pretty rough. Like libertarians are famous for this because they no one within the libertarian side of things agrees with any of the other libertarians about what the precise right amount of government is, and so it's like they're playing the Highlander game. Only one can live. And so that's why there's very few libertarians. They all kill each other, and then one person votes, and they lose the election.
That's right. You're right.
Yeah. Well, don't libertarians typically vote Republican?
In the U.S., yes. Around the rest of the world, libertarian actually means envisioning a society where everyone is sharing so much, you don't need a lot of government, and then you're free. So there's actually a left libertarian that's popular around the world, and then a right-leaning libertarian that's popular here in the U.S.
Okay.
But that party is not associated with the Libertarian Party in the U.S., as opposed to, like, the Green Party or something like that, which is a worldwide political movement. Not that makes a difference. It's just
Which party? I lost track of what you're...
The Green Party is a worldwide... The Green Party here is associated with the Green Party in Europe and
in Canada?
Okay.
I believe so in Canada, yeah. Not that that's a bad thing. I just pointed out as a matter of fact, that's all.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're going to have the outside perspective, which is Rick's rant. So we'll be right back on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Rick is someone who we affectionately call the crazy philosopher around here because Rick will rant about any topic that is near and dear to his heart. And if you're a regular listener of this show, you know what his views are on politics. You know how passionate he is about getting the solution out there, the Pentonomics philosophy. And now we're going to give him a chance to rant. We had the inside perspective with Jay Amernick, and we call Rick's rant the outside perspective because he is not even remotely involved in politics, but he has a lot to say on the topic. So, Rick, go ahead and rant.
Thank you. Well, I need to rant against headset batteries because now I'm on my handset here.
Yeah.
But no, I want to rant against ranters, okay? Because look. Every ranter who is filled with the emotion and the passion to rant against this or that, chances are they're missing something big. Okay? And so you got to take what they're saying with a grain of salt. The exception is me. Okay? I'm going to do a little Rush Limbaugh thing here. You know, the exception is me. I'll tell you why. Because we said this earlier in the program. We know the left is wrong because they don't admit where the right is right. We know the right is wrong because they don't admit where the left is right. The only way past this bottleneck is to take a step back and put on your transpartisan hat and try to figure out where the left is right and where the right is right and join this vision together. And I spent 7 years doing it. And it took me 2 years to get to the solution, and it took me 5 years to really understand the solution. It's hard. It's hard. So anyone else who's ranting about politics, they're wrong. Only Rick's rants are right.
All right, seriously? I think most people have the ability.
This is what happens when I think it's sides. Tuesday and it's Wednesday and I'm not prepared for the show. I'm sorry.
Okay. Because I'm going to give people the benefit of the doubt. Like, you guys know I'm all about yin and yang. I'm all about looking at both sides of the coin. I'm all about seeing both sides. But you're saying that nobody out there can see the other side. They're all stuck on either their left-wing stuff or they're stuck on their
Heather,
right-wing stuff.
Heather, you are totally ignoring the first law of ranting.
Which is?
Okay? During the rant, the rules of logic shift a little bit, and you're allowed to use words like everyone and no one, and people are supposed to understand that, yeah, there's exceptions, but we're not going to mess around and slow down the rant to deal with those details.
So you're allowed to rant because you're mad as hell and you're not going to take it anymore.
I acknowledge the truth in your statement, but you must also acknowledge the first law of ranting, which means that you can ignore those kinds of things.
Okay. Ranting is not logical. Got it. I will make a mental note of that for the future.
But to sort of tie it in, there's something very important that's happened is that Rick actually admitted
that he was wrong.
A mistake and wrongdoing, yes.
Which is apparently the topic of today's show. Yeah.
Inadvertently, yes.
Which is why I could never be a politician.
Because you too readily admit when you make a mistake?
My point was that if they would admit it outright, it would be no big deal. Because sometimes when they have admitted wrongdoing, everybody moves on. Oddly enough, everybody forgets that when Clarence Thomas was on in the hot seat to be confirmed as a Supreme Court justice, they asked him if he smoked pot, and he said, "Yes, I smoked it once. It didn't do anything for me. Next question." And it was never an issue because he had other problems that became.
See, I think that's cool. And you know what? I'm going to take this to a metaphor. I'm not going to talk about moving or a job, but I'm going to take this to a relationship metaphor. And if your spouse will never admit when they're wrong, how long do you think that marriage is going to last? It doesn't. We all have to admit when we're wrong, apologize, and move forward. That's the only way we can move forward. Otherwise, it just builds resentment. It builds negativity.
Yeah, I actually find it cleansing to admit that I was wrong when I was wrong. Oddly enough, because you can move on. And again, like I said, if President Clinton had said, "Yeah, I fooled around with Monica Lewinsky. I'm terribly sorry," and now let's move on.
Exactly.
Jay, I take it back. You could not be a politician because politicians don't use words like cleansing. I've never heard a politician say cleansing.
He's saying
there's a list of words you can't use, and cleansing is one of them.
I didn't say ethnic cleansing. I said cleansing.
He means emotionally cleansing.
Yeah.
Spiritually cleansing.
Yeah,
it's like a release. It's like a renewal.
I was thinking about a colonic, but
disinfectant.
I wasn't even thinking about ethnic cleansing. My God, you're right.
I don't know if I like disinfectant.
I can't win here.
I felt so disinfected.
Which is why I'm not running.
No, but honestly, from a Canadian perspective, I think Jay is a very refreshing type of politician. Because
I'm
in Canada,
not a politician.
If you were, because in Canada at least they embrace all kinds of different personalities and people as politicians. Exactly. Case in point, yes. And he's not the only one that's been kind of an oddball along the way.
He puts like Keith Richards to shame as far as like being just an out there.
He just announced. He just announced he will be back from rehab on July 1st, and he will be ready to campaign again.
Thank God. So the funny videos and sound bites will begin the second. Wonderful.
They will continue. Yes.
So this is the Toronto mayor. Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Jay's
right. Jay's right. He admits he's wrong.
Yeah, he does.
And no problem.
But he keeps doing it again, though. That's the thing. He admits he's wrong.
Okay,
We don't know.
He went to rehab.
I think the admit you're wrong thing only works. I think it only works. Like, if you're on the left, you can admit you're wrong about a personal foible. And if you're on the right, you can't admit you're wrong ever.
Why?
No,
that makes no sense. That's like wives can admit they're wrong, but husbands never admit they're wrong. That makes no sense. Actually, it's usually the other way around. It's the husbands admit they're wrong, and the wives don't like it. But in most, that's the stereotype anyway.
Yeah,
but that makes no sense. It's an equal. Everyone's on the same playing field.
It does seem that because what Rick's talking about, it does seem, and I don't know if it's true or not, but the Republicans tend to have less sort of personal problems, like affairs and things like drug problems.
Okay, what was like Wiener? Is Wiener left wing?
He's a Democrat. I don't know if I would consider him left wing. He's a Democrat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
No, I'm not saying the Republicans have fewer personal problems. I'm saying that if a Republican admits a failure, policy wise or personal wise, he is going to be thrown under the bus by both parties. If a Democrat admits a personal failure, I think they can largely get around it because of the nature of left-leaning political views and the nature of right-leaning political views. It's not fair, perhaps, but I just think it's
left-wing people tend to be more forgiving and more open-minded. Yes,
it's a different philosophy.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, but it's not about the political party, it's about the people that vote that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like part of the right-leaning philosophy is this is the way the world should work. And so if you break that, you're a hypocrite, you're gone. And the party can't support you because they have to be the non-hypocrite party. And the political left attacks you because any hypocrite statement, is something they can attack on. But if you're on the left, that philosophy is about, letting things happen, letting people have different views, letting, least within their space.
Yeah.
And so if you have the affair or whatever, and you meant it the right way, that's not that big of a concern politically. Your own party will keep supporting you, and then you can come back. And I think Wiener is the perfect example. You don't get infinite tries, but you can do what he did, exposing himself on his Twitter account, and then still come back and run for office and have supporters. Republican could never do that.
Right. Okay. Well, this has been a really interesting show. I love how it came together, even though, as Rick admitted, he was not prepared. He thought it was Tuesday. What the heck? But you know what? This was actually one of the best shows so far, in my opinion. So anyone listening, please go to politicalfixradio.com. There you will find the archives of all the Google Hangouts behind-the-scenes videos, as well as the archived audios from the radio show. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Heather Vail, and on behalf of myself and my co-hosts, Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz, we wish you an awesome week.
Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Vail Goss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.